Verdugo back to the pin. He caught it. He took it back.
He's doing everything right now.
That ball is gone. What a bullet by Devers.
I love to see the exit velocity on that one.
Time for another edition of the PC and Jerry podcast as we welcome you back now 2 weeks away from the start of the 2021 baseball season. I'm Todd Karen. He's Jerry Remy. Remdog, how are you?
Good. Doing good, TC. Good to be back back in New England after doing a big game this weekend.
Yeah, you get around. No doubt about that. From your living room to the office, back to the living room. You know, as I said that, it just sort of occurred to me, 2 weeks away. And as far as COVID goes, it's been a really quiet spring training. Like, I really thought it was going to be a mess in Florida and Arizona and guys would get it. And there've been a few cases, but not a lot. We haven't heard a lot of problems, a lot of shutdowns. I think the guys are really following protocols and being careful down there.
I think a year under their belt with having to deal with that stuff certainly helped them out this spring. And we were talking a lot about that this weekend, how difficult it had to be a year ago to play under those conditions. And I think they've learned a lot from it. I think going in, they were well warned what could possibly happen this spring because both places, Florida and Arizona, you know, were having some problems. And so it's a credit to, you know, the players, not only them, but the staff and what, you know, how they're going about this thing and make them, you know, separate them. The Red Sox workouts were totally different this year. They had it at different times, different players at different times, you know, so they've done everything they possibly can to, you know, keep the numbers down, and they've kept them way down. We've only had a few cases, and a lot of those were coming to camp, not while they were in camp. So, yeah, it's going very smoothly, and I think they've got to be very, very pleased about that. And, you know, every day for all of us seemed to be going a little bit smoother now, which is a good thing. You know, the vaccines are out. People are taking advantage of that. And, you know, hopefully we'll see the day where we can get to midway through the season or something like that. And you can have a full house at Fenway. Look at Texas. They got to open up the whole ballpark for opening day. So I don't know if that's a little too early or what, but the fact is, you know, it's in the future, which is a great thing to see.
I love that. I don't remember what the restrictions are in Texas after opening day. Opening day, it's full go, right? They can fill the place up. And then they have limited seating the second game. Anybody who's watched the Rangers knows there's going to be limited seating the second game anyways.
Yeah, exactly.
You sell out opening day, you don't sell out day two. That's the way it goes.
Always limited seating the second right? day. Always. Yeah.
You know, they're winning games down there. As I look, and as we date this, actually, they just fell behind. But a winning record down there. And I know we talk so much about results don't matter in spring training. Does winning matter at spring training? And does it matter more for this team because they were so bad last year?
You know, in most cases, I would say, no, it doesn't matter. That's if you know you've got a good club coming in. But when you've got a new manager coming back to manage a club to set a tone, you know, and you've got all these players who partook in the season last year and are down there this year, they want to create a winning culture. There's no question about that. And these games, in some cases, they're taken as serious as they are regular season games because, you know, they want to develop that culture. I mean, it's easy. If they roll back down there after last season and they, you know, they lose 10 in a row, you know, you can just imagine what it's going to be like. You know, you're not reading in the papers as much anymore right now that they, you know, they're going to be awful or horrible or this or that, you know, because they are winning some games and the pitching actually has been pretty darn good. So, you know, I think, in their case in particular, you know, if the Yankees were losing a lot of games, it would matter. But I think in a case where the Red Sox were winning games, I think it does matter because it sets a culture, it sets a tone that, yes, we are better than a lot of people think, and they're having fun in spring training. You know, when you win, you have more fun. It's easier to go through the daily routine of spring training. It's easier to go through the drills. It's fun to play the games because you are winning games, and they're proving to themselves that they're capable of doing that. So for that reason alone, I've never been one to put a lot of stock in spring training and the wins and losses, but I think it's just important this year coming off what happened last year and you know, the way they feel about themselves going into the season. I think that's very important because, you know, they've got to get off to a good start. They absolutely have to. I'm not talking about just in spring training. I'm talking about during the month of April. You look at the month of April, they've got a lot of games. They get a lot of games in the month of April. They don't have a lot of days off. So they got, you know, they got to come out of the chute playing good baseball. And the way to start that is start it down there and continue it on up here.
I like what you say, proving to themselves they can win. I mean, because confidence is going to be important for this team. I think Alex Cora brings a lot of confidence. I think that's a good thing. But I think, you know, they're going to come up north. And, you know, if they when they lose a game, the papers, the TV, they're all going to crush. They're waiting to crush this team. So you got to be able to be confident in the face of that. And like you said, the best way to push that off is to have a winning record. You have to win 70% of your games. But if you can be 6-4, if you can be 10-7, you know, get off the ground and make it a normal season. Last year, they had that 8-game losing streak pretty early, and that was that. They never recovered, and everybody piles on. You can't have anything like that this year.
You're right, and I think you bring up a very good point with Cora, because Cora's a winning-type manager. You know, he cultivates that kind of an attitude, you know, around a ball club. So he's making a big deal out of these wins, believe me. You know, and that's important to the players to see how excited he can get over a spring training win too. And so it kind of filters right down through the ball club, because look, he knows he's going to develop a whole different attitude than what this club left the Fenway Park with last year at the end of the season. And the way to do that is to start from day one of spring training before you even play a game. And he's done that. And so, and you can tell, you know, just doing the games on TV and watching the reaction of the dugout, you know, we had a great shot the other day with someone hit a grand slam. I forget who it was now already, but we were interviewing Bobby Dalbec at the time, and you could hear the roar of the dugout, you know, and I thought that was great because, you know, they're into it. It was late in the game. They had the lead. They were, you know, tacking on runs, and they were into it. And that's a very good sign. And they got, you know, they've got enough young players around there too, that, you know, they're excited about being there. They're excited about winning spring training games. And I think that rubs off on the veterans too, you know. So I think that, you know, you can put a lot of the credit with Cora, with the type of attitude that he brings every day to work, which is so important. When you see the manager being stable every day, positive every day, wants to win every day, I think that rubs off on the rest of the club.
There's no doubt about it. In fact, let's hear from Alex Cora, because now we're at the point where the injuries are what you're watching, right? Now you're 2 weeks away. You just got to get out of spring training healthy. Xander Bogaerts missed a lot of time at the beginning. He's been DHing. Ryan Brazier was late because of a personal issue, and now we hear about a fractured bone in his hand. Here's what Cora said about that.
Well, with Ryan, you know, he actually, during the off season working out, he suffered like a small fracture below his pinky, his throwing hand. I mean, it wasn't something that needed surgery, but obviously needed time. And he was on track as far as like his rehab, his progression and everything. He actually was here early in January to take care of that stuff. But then, you know, for personal reasons, he had to go home, and it slowed him down. It put him behind. He's progressing. Actually, you know, he feels good about it. He's still, you know, but I think the time he missed during early in camp, you know, it put him behind, you know, his schedule, and we have to be smart about it. He's very important for us, and we don't want to, you know, push him. I know he wants to do it, but, you know, we appreciate that. But at the same time, we have to be very smart with him, because as you guys know, he's a very important part of our bullpen.
So Brazier's a loss, obviously, because last year, you know, he came back. He'd had a tough time in 2019. Remember what he was in that championship year, 2018. You're giving him the ball the seventh, eighth inning. Last year, he became that guy again. And they've added some arms here. So his pecking order, he's got to be healthy and get in there to get that late game opportunity.
Yeah, he does. And, you know, I don't know how long it's going to be for him, but that's a tough break for the Red Sox coming out of the chute, because he was a guy that was very strong for him. You know, he's got a very good fastball, good slider. He's not afraid of the late innings. He's not afraid to work in those innings. And, you know, it's a shame that something like that has to happen to him during the offseason and carry the issues into the regular season. So, but they've also got some guys that is back this year, you know, like Darwin Hernandez, who can help out in those situations. And you know, he looked very good in the game that we had over the weekend too. And he looks great. I mean, he lost a lot of weight, and he looks like he's in very good shape and ready to take over a major role in that in that bullpen. So, you know, we saw Ottavino pitch on over the weekend. He's working on his slider. He's trying to get his slider back. And, you know, I probably saw about four or five of them in the game. And I would say that maybe one or two of them are real sharp. The others still needed some work, and he knows that. So, you know, they've got some arms to replace Brazier, I think, at the beginning. But obviously he's a huge addition to have out there. That just gives them another a power arm in the bullpen to help them work.
You know, almost sounds like Cora is kind of deciding between Barnes and Ottavino to be his closer at the start of the year. At this point, who do you think gets the ball in the ninth?
I think it's Barnes. I think Barnes will get the ball in the ninth inning. I think that, you know, he's also throwing the ball very well. I think Ottavino right now is a little bit of a work in progress because he's trying to tighten up that slider and have it become what it was 2 years ago. And I think that, you know, while he's working on that, you know, it might be a better role for him to be in the seventh inning and the eighth inning prior instead of trying to close out. And I think Barnes' stuff is a little bit, I think it's a little bit better for closing out right now. His velocity on his fastball has been up. You know, we know he's got that curveball that a lot of guys chase in the dirt all the time. So he might be the better choice, I think, at this particular time. And we'll have to see how the season goes. Obviously, they've got some flexibility out there. But I think right now, as long as Ottavino's working on the breaking ball, that means he's not confident in it, totally confident in it. And you don't want to put somebody out there in that situation that's not 100%, you know, sold on his breaking ball right now. And I think that's exactly where he is. But I think, you know, once it clicks in for him, it's going to come back for him. And then I think, you know, then you have total confidence in all of your pitches and you become a different guy.
So let's circle back. The other big thing Cora was talking about there was Xander Bogaerts. And it's good to see him hitting. Sounds like he'll be shortstop here. If not today, then in the next day or two. I found myself looking over this team and I just take Xander Bogaerts for granted. You know, yeah. Like I'm thinking about everything else, everywhere else. Devers has got to get better defensively. We need JD Martinez to bounce back. The outfield's going to move around. Who's at second base? You don't think about Bogaerts because he's just there. Generally been 150 plus every year, games played at shortstop, giving you a great bat. He's worked himself into being a plus defender over there. And you know, really what that means is you're really relying on him. Like they could not afford to lose Xander Bogaerts for any serious amount of time.
No, they have nobody there that can back him up either. You know, they have we saw Kiki Hernandez play there over the weekend. And, you know, you can tell that, you know, of all the positions that he plays, that's not going to be his strength, obviously, as shortstop. Christian Arroyo, we've seen play some a shortstop, you know, nowhere near the range of a Xander Bogaerts. So you do take it for granted because he's always out there. He plays hurt. I was getting a little concerned because this thing was going on since the beginning of spring training. And you kind of, at the beginning of spring training, you go, well, it's a little bit of stiffness, soreness from coming back. But the fact is it went on so long, I was starting to get concerned myself. And I was just waiting for that call to say, oh, he's going to Boston for an MRI. And, you know, that's never comes back very good. So the fact is that, you know, he's they're taking their time with him. He's getting some at-bats now. So his timing at the plate should be fine. He should get plenty of at-bats between now and the end of spring training, which will be fine for him offensively. Now he's going to get reps in the field, you know, and I think that's the biggest step because he's going to have to make throws. Now, I know for a fact that he was down there taking in, you know, some infield work, making some throws to first base, making some throws to second base, and all seemed fine. And so I think that's why they're pointing. I think they're being very deliberate, knowing that they still got two solid weeks of games, which is plenty, believe me, for a position player to get in there and be ready for opening day.
You know, the other thing about Bogaerts, he signed that 6-year deal. Everybody else, you know, Betts is gone, Bradley's gone, Benintendi's gone, right? A lot of the team has left. He signed the deal, probably left some money on the table because he wanted to stay here. He told Scott Boras, get this deal done, I want to stay here. But he's got that opt-out after next year. And whether he's happy with the Red Sox or not, Fernando Tatis Jr. changes everything, right? I mean, a 14-year, 300, what was it, 360, whatever it was, ridiculous amount of money that even I think if he's going to stay in Boston, the Sox are probably going to have to get a new deal done with him. But I also think they're going to have to show him that they're going in the right direction. I mean, he doesn't want to sit around for a 5-year rebuild, and I don't think it will be, but
right.
I think he wants to see this team's coming together because he wants to have a chance to contend again Yeah, he's 28. I mean, when that opt-out comes, he's going to be 30. I mean, he doesn't want to hang around for a long-term rebuilding project.
I would agree with you. You know, I think that, you know, that comes into play. Obviously, the money comes into play big time with everybody. And the fact that you want to play here, you know, so did Jackie Bradley. You know, he wanted to play here too, and he's no longer here. You know, so the fact is that, you know, guys get that kind of cash thrown in front of them. It's awfully tough to turn down. It's a once in a lifetime opportunity for these guys. So it becomes a very important year for them. You know, I agree with you on the organization going in the right direction. And I believe it is. And I think that it will continue to go in the right direction. But he's got to be part of it, in my opinion. You know, it's awfully tough to take a guy like that out of the lineup. Now, you've got a guy like Jeter Downs, who we watched play. And this kid can play. He's the real deal. And but, you know, is he ready to step into a position that soon? I'm not so sure about that, you know. And you're much stronger with a Xander Bogaerts, I think, and a Jeter Downs maybe in another position than you would be, obviously, with just one of them. So it's a big year for Bogaerts. And, you know, when it comes to predicting, you know, if a guy wants to stay, I think the majority of them do want to stay with their club. But, man, when you see that kind of money floating in front of you, it's like you go, you know, like you said, TC, it's 300 plus, and it's like you forget the hundreds of thousands that we're not remembering. And that's a lot of dough. So it's tough to turn down those opportunities.
Well, you know what I always say, and I'm not saying this about Xander Bogaerts, I'm talking about players in general. These are competitive guys. These are athletes who have tried to be the best at what they do their whole life.
Right.
And the money is as much a scoreboard as it is anything else.
Sure it is.
They've all got enough money. Right, they're all making Jerry Remy money. They'll never have to worry about money again. Okay, everybody's fine. But you know, the point is, if I think I'm one of the three best guys at my position in the game,
the other
two are making this, I don't want to be here.
Right.
Even if that's a lot of money, I want to be there. Show me I am, in your eyes, one of the best. I think people forget that. You always hear people, how much money do they need? It's not about that when you get, I mean, again, when you're making the minimum, yes, you want to make your money.
Yes.
But once you're making your $10 million or whatever it is, it's no longer about, like, cost of living.
Right.
It's now about, I'm an elite player. I should be making an elite salary. My contract should come now.
All players go through that. You know, when I had a chance to be a free agent one time in my career, and I remember, you know, I tried to figure out where I fit in at that particular time in that particular year. And I felt like I should have been in – 1, 2, or 3, you know, in baseball at that particular time, at the year that I happened to come up. And I ended up being 1 for 1 year because, you know, it just worked out that way. And then, of course, guys that I expected to jump me, to leapfrog me, did. But it was important to me, you know, because it meant that, you know, I was recognized as, you know, at that particular year as the best at second base in baseball. And it means a lot to people. It really does, you know. And I was in the same situation. I was playing for my hometown team, you know, but I still was out there taking offers from different clubs like the Oakland Athletics, from like Chicago Cubs, you know, from the Yankees actually drafted me, you know, and they had Willie Randolph at second base. What were they going to do with me? But, you know, it was just something to tick off the Red Sox. I don't know. But the fact is, you know, I had two or three serious teams that were dealing with me. And in a few cases, they were very close, if not above, what the Red Sox were offering, but not far enough above to where it was a move, or the length of contract was not enough for me, you know, to move at that particular time in my career. So, you know, I ended up staying here because the money was close, very close, and the length of contract was what I was looking for. And I was also dealing with a bad knee. So, you know, it would have been hard for me in some of these places to go out and even pass a physical maybe, you know, to get that kind of money. And I didn't want to take that chance because then your value goes to zero. So, you know, you take it when you can get it, and you take it where you think you belong. And, you know, if people pass you after that, they pass you after that. But it makes you feel good that at that particular time you are recognized as this. And that's exactly what, you know, Tatis is going through. That's what a guy like Machado was going through in San Diego a year ago. And that's what Bogaerts is going to go through. He's going to go through the same situation, same thought process, and we'll see how it plays out.
Was Billy Martin in New York or Oakland? Didn't Billy Martin?
No, Billy was in Oakland.
He was in Oakland.
Billy wanted me really bad. He let me know that before the year was over, the previous year. He said, I want you out here next year because I really fit into his style of baseball. For some reason, he always took a liking to me, even when he was manager of the Yankees. You know, he always used to come up and talk to me because I think Billy felt that I played the game the way he did when he played. And he liked that, you know, and he it'd be funny because the year I was a free agent, every time I'd come to the plate as a leadoff hitter, you know, for the Red Sox, he'd be yelling at the other side of the dugout, you're going to be here next year. You're going to be here. And I said, okay. You know, he used to make me laugh before the first pitch. And so, you know, they made a very strong bid. They made a very impressive bid for me. But again, it was hard to pull me away from here, you know, to go back to the West Coast and how things change in life, TC. You know, had I made that decision, which was appealing because I did want to play for Billy. I really did.
Sure.
And the money was close. It was just moving from coast to coast. It wasn't enough to say, okay, you got to go. But my whole life would have changed because I would have gone back out there and I never would have got the job that I've got now, which has kept me here now for 34 years. So, I mean, it's funny how, you know, decisions you can make 34 years ago can shape the rest of your life, really. And it shaped the rest of my life.
That's amazing. Yeah, that's a great point. Yeah, I don't think you would have made it as the broadcaster of the Oakland A's.
Never would have been a broadcaster for the Oakland A's.
Yeah, I don't think you'd be resonating with the wine connoisseurs of Northern California.
You know? I never would have had the opportunity back here, you know,
right.
So
right.
It's amazing how things work out.
It is pretty amazing, no doubt about that. Back to the team. I thought this was interesting. Alex Cora has pretty much said, we're going to start the season with 14 pitchers. Now, remember, when they went to 26-man roster, the original agreement was 13 pitchers max, 30 position players. They waived that this year because pitchers are going to be built up. It's because of last year. There's going to be some pitching issues. So that's a short bench, right? That's why they want so much versatility.
Right.
So let's assume Kike Hernandez is your starting second baseman. You got a little bit of a problem right now because I'm not sure Franchi Cordero is going to be ready.
Right.
Start of the year. Let's say he is, just for this discussion. So Franchi Cordero, Hunter Renfroe, and Alex Verdugo are your outfielders.
Right.
So you've got three position players. One's your backup catcher. That's Plawecki. You've got two spots left. Marwin Gonzalez is one of them. That's why he's here, because he can bounce around. And so it really comes down to Christian Arroyo or Michael Chavis for probably the last spot. And now, to be clear, one has options, one doesn't. Chavis has options remaining, Arroyo doesn't. So you can sort of figure out how it's going to go. But I got to say, Michael Chavis is making it a tough decision because he's having a great spring.
He's having a terrific spring, you know, and he looks totally different. It's like he rebuilt himself. He actually shrunk a little bit, you know, and he looks terrific. He really does. You know, we had a chance to watch him over the weekend on the games and, you know, he really looks in great shape. He's having a terrific spring offensively. He's trying to teach himself to stay off that high fastball and those low breaking balls in the direct two pitches that he chases a lot. And he's trying to do that. And he's been able to do that. And, you know, he's made the adjustments he's had to make. I give him a lot of credit. You know, he's been criticized for the last couple of years and should have been. I mean, really should have been. Because he was very stubborn in the way that he was not making any adjustments at the major league level. And every player has to do that. And he went back home this year and something clicked in because he probably knew that his big league life was on the line. And he finally did make some adjustments. And now they're paying off in spring training. So he's making that decision a little bit more difficult. The problem he has is that they're going to switch around so much, you know, with guys in the outfield in particular. You know, I think Arroyo is better suited for second base, you know, and Arroyo, you know, is pretty solid out there. He's not slick. He's not, you know, doesn't have a great deal of range, but he's very solid. And that hurts Chavis a little bit. Now, I haven't seen Chavis play second base in spring training, not in the games that I've done. He's been at first base, hasn't played the outfield at all. And so, you know, it's kind of like they got him locked into one spot over there at first base, backing up Dahlbeck. And it seems to me that if there is a guy to go, it's probably going to be him. And I'm going to tell you what, that's going to be a tough let go for Cora when he's going to sit down and talk to him and say, look, you know, you've done everything we've asked. You know, how do you tell a kid? We've done everything we've asked you to do. You've done it. You've had a great spring, but we just don't have any room for you right now. And
well, it's an interesting point. Sorry, Jerry. It's an interesting point because Arroyo was a first round draft pick. This is a guy who, you know, and Chaim Bloom basically traded Evan Longoria as part of the deal to get him, to get Arroyo in Tampa Bay. So they he loved him there.
Right.
To get him last year, he was pretty good at the end last year when not much good was happening for the Red Sox. He came in and had himself a nice end, hitting 300 here at spring training with a 900 OPS. So, you know, it'd be one thing. If he was struggling, I'd say, okay, you got to make the case that Chavis makes you a better team. I'm not sure he right now that there's that much separation between them. And it allows you to keep them both in the organization. So it's a, because if Arroyo, if you release Arroyo, someone's going to grab him. The spring he's having, his first round draft pick pedigree, he's going to have an opportunity to go somewhere. So now again, Franchi Cordero's injured. So you might wind up with Kike out in the outfield a lot at the beginning of the year, Arroyo starting at second base and Chavis on the bench with the team because they have that extra spot. So you might get both because of the injuries, but I think if it's one or the other, I think it's pretty clear that it's going to be Arroyo.
Yeah, I think if there's a choice, it's going to be Arroyo is going to be there. And you're right about, you know, if you can make the club on opening day. Now, we know how many things. I think the roster changes within a week. You know, I mean, it changes within a week every year. You'll see somebody coming up from Pawtucket, and, you know, who knows who that might be. Chavis would be probably one of the first calls, you know, so you know, those are decisions, boy, they're tough to make. It's really tough to tell a kid who's done everything you've asked them to do that, you know, you've done it, you've had success here, but we don't have any room for you. But keep your chin up because you'll be one of the first guys called up if we need somebody, you know. And that, you know, I things I've read, and I haven't had a chance, obviously, to talk with him, but things I've read, he said all the right things. I'll do whatever they want me to do, you know, whatever they expect out of me, I'll do. And I'll accept it, and I'll go play well. And but we know how quick the roster turns over. It starts almost immediately. I mean, it starts almost a couple of days after opening day.
You know, the thing that makes it tougher this year is there's no minor league games for a month. So when you get sent down, you're getting sent to the alternate trading site where you go work out every day. Now there'll be a taxi squad. So I'm guessing a guy like Chavis, whoever gets cut. Is going to end up hanging around with the big team and probably doing all their work there instead of going to Worcester. That makes sense.
Now, the other possibility, too, is he shown enough to other clubs right now that he has changed and he's got some value out there that he didn't have at the end of last year?
Someone's got an extra pitcher. They're always looking for pitching, right?
Exactly. That's a possibility over the last couple of weeks of spring training because he is a different guy when you watch him. And scouts that are watching him are watching him very closely and say, wait a minute, we might have something right here that, you know, nobody expected at the end of last season. Maybe the name all of a sudden pops up in some kind of a deal.
All right, I got to finish with this because I got to ask you this. I had it up. I want to make sure I get it right. Did you see the at-bat last night for the Mets?
No, I didn't.
This is the most random spring training thing ever. Of course you didn't, right? Who's going to say it? Luis Guillorme was the Mets hitter facing Jordan Hicks, a 22-pitch at-bat in spring training.
And the
greatest thing was, you know, there's no fans. There's very few fans. So the Mets dugout with each pitch is going nuts. Like, you hear them, and they're screaming like it's game 7 of the World Series. You know, once it gets to – and I don't think he got to full count till the 20th pitch.
Yeah.
So he was fouling off everything early on. And you know – a little bloop foul that's just out of the reach of the third baseman. Mets dugout goes nuts. And then he draws a walk. On the 22nd pitch, he draws a walk.
Yeah.
And again, they go, there's bedlam in the Mets dugout, right? I'm just trying to think. And the first thing I thought of when it got to the 20th pitch.
Stop.
Jerry Remy would have stopped the game right there. Roll the inning. That's it. We're done.
That's it. My guy's throwing 20 pitches. No more. It's over. Have your fun somewhere else.
I just, you know, and it's funny, like if that were the regular season, that'd be such an epic moment, but it's probably annoying more than anything in a spring training game, right? Because the pitcher's trying to get his work in, the guys are trying to move on.
By that time, TC, I got my bag packed already, you know, everything's ready to go to the car, right? And this guy's following up 22 pitches and the manager's letting him throw more than 20 pitches. Are you kidding me? Let's go. It's time to fly.
That's all I kept thinking. I kept thinking, if I were Jerry Remy, man, I would have jumped up, like, end this inning. Let's go. Let's roll it. We're done. All right. Let's hope we don't get too many 22. I will say this, by the way. Did you have Pivetta over the weekend at all?
No.
I don't think you did.
No.
Man, he gets it and throws.
Yeah.
He is pitching like he's double parked, and it works for him because he's got the hitters on their heels right now. I think he looks great in spring training, but I love a guy, not just because we want to move along, but it's so much more fun to watch as a fan. I mean, it's action. The pitching is action.
Yes.
Instead of standing around looking at each other, trying to figure out what to do.
Yeah, it's all about pace of game, and that's where it starts. It starts on the mound.
And he's got it. All right, looking forward to it. We're getting down to it. Next week, we'll get serious now. Your predictions next week, Jerry. So get to work here. Week is prediction week.
That means I have a whole week to do some homework.
A week for homework, so get it done. No excuses to be late on this. Jerry, it was fun. We appreciate it, as always.
All right, great to see you.
That's Jerry Remy. I'm Tom Terran. This was the PC and Jerry podcast. Thanks for joining us.